I'm Natalie Hutchison with UN News. Discrimination and violence towards members of the LGBTI community continues to be pervasive in every region of the world, with same-sex marriages still considered a crime in 69 countries. That's from Victor Madrigal Borlos, the UN independent expert on protection against violence and discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, who presented a new report to the General Assembly last week outlining how negative notions of LGBTI people manifest and how best to stop them. In an interview with UN News' Antonio Lafuente, he explained how states need to acknowledge that they have a duty to decriminalize and battle negative stigma against lesbian, bisexual, gay, transgender, and intersex people.
This report that I presented today to the Third Committee of the General Assembly is the last in a series of reports that have addressed priority topics for the mandate. And the conclusion of which is that discrimination and violence based on sexual orientation and gender identity continues to be pervasive in every region of the world. That it manifests itself through structures of negation and stigma, associating automatically and without any evidence LGBTI lives with crime, with illness, and with sin, in a way that therefore fuels cycles of violence and discrimination. The reports also have taken stock of significant progress, also in all regions of the world, when states are actually accepting and taking their responsibility to acknowledge not only the existence and reality of LGBT persons within the social fabric under their jurisdiction, but also, very importantly, acknowledging their duty to dismantle systems of criminalization and to dismantle structures of stigma. And in that connection, I would say that this mandate has the great privilege of dealing with a topic in which, even though the situation is deeply worrisome and affecting very gravely the lived realities of millions of people around the world, it also can draw on significant good and best practice that I have identified in the context of collaborative and vigorous dialogue with the community of nations and with civil society.
Why all this discrimination and violence to LGBT persons in a matter that seems very private and personal?
Well, there's a number of theories around the reasoning and the agendas and interests that lie behind violence and discrimination. I believe that there's a number of explanations that lie in the idea of the way that societies are structured, and in particular, the way that this world that we live in, there's a very strong tendency to conceive the world in binary terms. This is not unique, by the way. There's many societies around the world that have accepted and acknowledged and embraced gender diversity for millennia. And I give many examples of that in my report. But, of course, dominant structures in our societies are very much binary, and they are very much structured in relation to what is conceived as the male and the female. And the male and the female are related automatically in those structures with a certain genital configuration, and that certain genital configuration is in itself at the base of a number of roles and placement in society. And I think that persons belonging to gender diversity and sexual diversity challenge those notions and challenge some fundamental and flawed premises of those notions. And I think that violence and discrimination against gay men, lesbian women, bisexual persons, trans persons, and gender diverse persons is usually a manifestation of defense of that order. In this connection, what is, in my view, one of the findings of the mandate is that whenever a political leader states that LGBT people don't exist within her or his jurisdiction, she or he is speaking in a completely baseless statement that is actually not fundamented in any kind of evidence, because what the mandate has received and established now strongly is the fact that LGBT people have existed all through time in all societies and in all cultural traditions.
You have said that different regions have different approaches, and there are regions that has criminalized even these LGBT persons. Where are those regions?
Well, criminalization is still existing in 69 countries around the world, and there are certain patterns that can be found in context of criminalization. One of them is that it is strongly connected to colonial structures. So, for example, countries throughout the Commonwealth maintain criminalization deriving from sections that were introduced in criminal codes during the British rule of this region of the world. Interestingly and importantly, the Prime Minister of the UK expressed an apology because of the introduction of criminalizing legislation throughout the Commonwealth and vowed to work in partnership with these countries for decriminalization. I think that, so for example, criminalization is still the rule in the Caribbean region, in certain countries of sub-Saharan Africa, and in number of countries of Asia and the Middle East. Together, it is important to note that these countries where criminalization is still the rule comprise 2 billion persons. That means that 2 billion persons are living today in criminalized environments. One of the great developments in this area is that the last year, the Supreme Court of India decriminalized, and in that act actually took 1 billion persons out of a criminalized environment, or over 1 billion persons. But still, this is very much an everyday reality for what I believe to be hundreds of millions of LGBT people in the 69 countries. And therefore an agenda that the mandate is very keen to work with in the future.
And what's the situation of LGBT persons in the post-Soviet countries, especially in Chechnya and Russia, where gays are prosecuted, tortured, and forced to name other gay men with apparently complete impunity? Has you been able to raise this issue with the Russian authorities?
My mandate has had the opportunity to seize itself of this problematic, along with a number of other special rapporteurs, including the special rapporteur on torture, the special rapporteur on extrajudicial executions, and a number of other of my colleagues. All of us are deeply concerned about allegations concerning the persecution, torture, and in some cases the killing of gay men and lesbian women in Chechnya. And we have indeed actually addressed the Russian government in relation to this matter at least twice during the existence of my mandate. The allegations that are related to this issue are quite, as I repeat, quite concerning. And my colleagues and I have very much hope to engage. Unfortunately, we have received no substantive response in relation to these issues. But that is not to say that we don't remain gravely concerned in relation to the information that we have received.
And what are your main recommendations to the states?
I think the cycle of reports with which I have concluded today reveals that the most important measures are the ones that states take to ensure dismantling discriminatory legislation, very importantly, including criminalizing provisions, but also provisions that have in themselves the impact of discriminating or exercising violence, even though they might not be specifically aimed at criminalizing. Secondly, I think that it's important for states to study the issuance of anti-discrimination legislation in those contexts where it might prove useful and necessary to ensure inclusion, and to study the issuance of public policy in that connection as well. And finally, it is very important for me to underline that none of these frameworks is actually conducive to change unless there is true access to effective and efficient remedies, so that LGBT persons who are a deeply empowered community can accede to impartial judiciaries that can ascertain the rights existing in these frameworks.